Programming on WILL is made possible in part by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, where U of I theater students present the award-winning play Intimate Apparel, and dance students entertain with wide-ranging movement language in Studio Dance 2. For more information, visit KrannertCenter.com.
This is Focus 580, our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us and here for the second hour of the program. The producers for the show, Harriet Williamson and Martha Deal, and Jason Croft is at the controls this morning. This morning, in this part of the show, we'll be talking about a trend that we have seen more and more in higher education, particularly over, roughly speaking, over the last couple of decades. And that is that colleges and universities here in the United States have become increasingly reliant on temporary academic labor. Here we're talking about professors that don't have tenure and never will have tenure. In many cases, they make much less than their tenured colleagues. They don't get benefits. Sometimes these people have to commute actually between campuses, different campuses, to manage to put together enough salary to make ends meet. And in this part of the show, we'll be talking a little bit about the costs not only borne by these teachers, but also by the students that they serve. Our guest for the program is Joe Barry. He's authored a book on this subject that was published last fall. The title of the book is Reclaiming the Ivory Tower, Organizing Adjuncts to Change Higher Education. It's published by the Monthly Review Press. And it takes a look at what we know about these folks and about their positions and their situations. And then also it is, in large part, a guide for organizing these folks. If you're interested in the book, you head out to the bookstore or to the library or look for it. Let me just give you a little bit more by way of background about our guest, Joe Barry. Currently, he teaches as a non-tenure-track instructor at University of Illinois in the Chicago Labor Education Program, where they teach trade unionists. He also teaches history part-time at Roosevelt University. He's on the executive committee of his union there. That's the Roosevelt Adjunct Faculty Association. He chairs the Chicago Coalition of Contingent Academic Labor. That's a regional group. He's also on the coordinating committee of the North American Alliance for Fair Employment, and that is a group of organizations concerned with contingent and precarious employment. And he has worked as a contingent faculty person now for over 20 years in California and Pennsylvania and in Illinois. And he's here with us in the studio this morning. As we talk, questions are welcome. 333-9455. Toll free 800-222-9455. Thanks very much
for being Thank here. You. Good to be here.
How many people are we talking about in this category?
Over 500,000. There are more non-tenure track, precarious college faculty in the United States than there are steel workers today.
And is this the numbers and the percentage of faculty that's made up by these kind of people, has that been going up over time?
Yeah, it's depending on how you draw the edges of the universe, it's certainly above 60 and perhaps really over 80 if we percentage-wise. And it really became a mass phenomenon starting in the 70s, first in the community colleges.
The bottom line here is, as I understand it, the reason we have these people at all, and that perhaps the reason that we have more and more of them over time, is simply that it's a way for colleges and universities to trim their budgets, right? Save money.
That's half of the answer. In the 1970s, there was in the public sector, what was called the budget crisis, but the demand for higher education continued. In the private sector, it was called the profit crisis, but the net result was the same, was that there was less contributions to private, nonprofit universities. And so the incentive to trim the budgets with hiring temporary faculty was great. The other thing that happened in the 70s was the transition from full-time traditional age students coming straight out of high school to more and more working adults returning on a part-time basis. It was much harder to predict what they would take, what their classes, what they would take, how many classes, what subjects, how many sections to offer, that sort of thing. And so temporary faculty, especially part-timers, gave administrators a degree of flexibility that they found extremely convenient. And my argument is that both on the economic and the flexibility front, what was thought to have been perhaps a temporary fix has literally become an addiction that the institutional leaderships, the administrations and boards of trustees have become addicted to.
Yeah. And the thing about that that makes it really tough on a lot of these folks is that they are on annual contracts. And so you may have someone, when it comes to the end of the spring semester, they may be laid off. And though they may get hired back later, there is this, for a lot of these folks, there's this great uncertainty about whether they were going to continue to have a job or not.
Even annual is something that some people have to fight for. Per class, per semester, or per quarter is extremely common. And so the level of insecurity and then matching different jobs in different places with different schedules and worrying about if you're going to be able to put together anything resembling your rent.
Mm-hmm. Well, how many of these folks indeed do have to work more than one job or maybe have jobs at more than one university?
Well, they say that something approaching between 45 and 50% of the people teaching higher education now are part-time. There's also a large number of full-time temporaries. Actually, the majority of people hired full-time in the last 5 years have been off the tenure track, the majority. So even full-time doesn't mean tenure track anymore. But of the part-timers, virtually all have other jobs, with the exception of maybe 10 or 20% who have substantial other commitments, the equivalent of a job that don't pay them, child care, elder care, you know, those kinds of things, or are pursuing, you know, artistic and other tasks that, you know, are not paid but are major life tasks. Because you can't make a living as a part-timer in one place. I mean, it's simply, you know, not possible unless the small number that have independent incomes of some sort.
Mm-hmm. Well, wasn't part of the thinking behind creating these kind of positions that you could get someone for whom teaching would not be a primary job? They would have, right. It would, however, be someone who had some particular special area of expertise. And what you would be doing was taking advantage of that, having them come in, maybe teach one class. But for them, that was not going to be a career.
That was the typical adjunct or contingent or temporary faculty member in the days before the 70s. Mm-hmm. And that's still the image that administrators like to project and why they say we don't need equal pay for equal work or job security or any of the, or organization into unions because that's who we are. In fact, now that is a tiny percentage. That was the traditional. But now we are the norm. We are the majority of college teachers now, and the colleges, we are not adjunct. I mean, an adjunct implies a minority add-on to the central body. We are the majority. What word you want to use? I don't even like the word adjunct, but since that's the generic word that's used, that's the word that was used in the book title. But it really isn't properly descriptive anymore. In Canada and Mexico, they use the word precarious, which I'm quite fond of.
Yeah. Oh, how do salaries compare for these people as if you compare them to those professors who are either tenured or on a tenure track?
Well, the full-time temporaries who are, like I say, being hired in greater and greater numbers tend to be paid at the bottom of the full-time tenure track scale. Okay. Mm-hmm. The part-time adjuncts tend to be paid something less than 50% of pro rata on a per-class basis. A recent study by a coalition of disciplinary organizations suggested that, and this was 3 years ago, that the average was somewhere around $2,000, $2,100 per three-unit class. You multiply that times a load of 6 to 10 a year, and you get even say 10 maximum, you get an annual salary of $2,000 without benefits.
Mm-hmm. And as far as their qualifications are concerned, their experience, their degrees that they have earned and so forth, mm-hmm. how do they – I can imagine some people saying, well, yeah, maybe they're paid less, but maybe they're worth less.
Well, the students pay the same tuition. The classes are listed the same in the – they're the same catalog classes. The credits are the same on the transcripts. There is less – percentage of people have PhDs, but of course we all know that does having a PhD in fact make one a better undergraduate instructor? That's an open question. Mm-hmm. And many do have PhDs, many have pursued research, and of course many more would if they had the economic wherewithal to do so. And of course in the community colleges, which is the largest segment of higher education in the United States, the ticket for most full-time tenure-track faculty is the master's, not the PhD.
Yeah.
Although the labor force and the market has gotten such that even community colleges now can demand PhDs for everything because of what the competition for jobs, what's out there.
Yeah. We have as our guest here in this part of Focus 580, Joe Berry. He is an adjunct faculty member at U of I Chicago and also at Roosevelt University. And he is the author of the book Reclaiming the Ivory Tower. The subtitle is Organizing Adjuncts to Change Higher Education, published by the Monthly Review Press. Came out last fall.
I should correct you slightly.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah?
Because my employer will, my boss will get upset. I actually work for the University of Illinois administratively here in Champaign-Urbana in the Chicago satellite office, the extension office, extension office of the Institute for Labor and Industrial Relations. It's way too complicated.
We love that at universities. We love that kind of thing.
It's way too complicated,
yes.
But if I don't say it when I'm sitting on the radio station here.
All right, very good. We try to be correct. We just like to make things complicated. We have several callers here, and let's just start talking with folks. First in Urbana here, line number one. Hello.
Oh, hi. Mm-hmm. What a really important subject considering the environment at the University of Illinois and all these other universities. I know a lot of people with doctorates who are doing exactly what you're talking about with the very, very slim hope of ever seeing a career in their fields. And they're treated worse than, migrant laborers. There's this huge discussion now because of Congress going through this immigration bill about how people are exploited, these poor indigent migrants are exploited by employers. I mean, these are state and privately run universities with highly educated management, and they treat these people like they're, slave labor, in my opinion. I mean, when I was getting my doctorate in the late 70s and early 80s, I looked out and saw that, I don't know if I'd be able to get an academic job. So I basically, after finishing, I started in the advertising business, free markets and private industry, and I made a lot of money at it. But I kept looking back, yearning to think I'd rather sit at a university or be at a university and do what I really trained myself to do. But I really, really thank you for your work. I just am astonished at what goes on and how these people are treated. I mean, they're very well educated. They're smart. They're aggressive. They're, industrious. And they're treated like they're fodder. And it's no different than getting somebody from Mexico to pick your fruit. And I wanted to say that because I really admire what you're doing. Thank you very much.
All right. Well, you can comment on it any way you like.
Yeah, I would just say that it's interesting that the best film made about us called Degrees of Shame by a filmmaker named Barbara Wolf, a play on the old Edward R. Murrow movie about farm workers called Harvest of Shame, that you may be familiar with, and making those comparisons is sort of the best introduction to the situation that has been done. Your observations have been made by many others, and just like farm workers, regardless of how much education we've got, the only thing that changes those situations is people organizing, appealing to the humanity and conscience of our highly educated employers has not seemed to have any significant discernible effect.
Well, let's talk with someone in Champaign next. Line two. Hello.
Hello. I was wondering if you could address the issues of how it affects the institutions and their quality and how it affects the students and the quality of their education. For example, I remember when I lived in New York City and I worked part-time at various outlets of CUNY, traveling from the Bronx to Manhattan and whatever, and changing around. I worked in all five boroughs of the city of New York. But like, for example, we didn't have to attend meetings. I don't even know if we were welcome to attend meetings, but we were running around from one school to the other, and we would have had to attend double meetings. So I believe it was the union that said that we couldn't be required to attend meetings. But I don't know whether there are other cases where there aren't unions where one would be required to attend meetings in two different departments or not. And then I can't remember for sure if we had insurance at the very beginning, but I remember that I don't think we did have insurance. I think that's a very big issue, that part-time people don't have insurance and benefits. But then the union was very strong or fairly strong in New York City, and we were able to pay for our own insurance, but it wasn't paid for by the institution. So maybe you can address some of those issues.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, you've named a lot of different things, and you're correct in all of it, because it's coming from your own experience. You'll be happy to know that situation has improved somewhat at the City University of New York at CUNY. There was a bit of a revolution in the faculty union there, and a much more pro part-time contingent faculty leadership was elected a few years ago, and they've made some substantial progress. People do get insurance, at least a substantial number of people do, depending on how much they teach and for how long. And other conditions people have been working on. That's one of the better union contracts in the country. In fact, is for folks at that institution. But the Professional Staff Congress is the union there.
Well, I worked back there in the early '80s. So
right. The thing with meetings is a common issue. On the one hand, people would like to be included in the discussions that decide things, sometimes like what textbooks they have to choose and stuff like that. On the other hand, not being paid for it requires, is just asking people to work for free in order to have any influence over their own lives, or maybe even not have a vote in the meetings, or be scared to say anything, because if they disagree with a full-timer who might be on the next hiring committee, when there was a tenure-track job opening up. And so it's an extremely contradictory situation for people to pursue, and ultimately no answer individually. That's, again, I'd say that's the only answer, is to improve the conditions from the bottom up with organization. And that's what people are more and more coming to.
Could you address the issues of,
quality, right.
Of quality and of insurance, but I think you did talk about insurance for New York City.
Yeah, insurance is a big issue all over the country. Most places, most people don't have it, especially people working part-time. And it's a huge issue, and very few people have been able to gain it recently through collective bargaining because of the cost and the resistance of administrators to taking on that that responsibility. As a group, I think we as a group are extremely supportive of the demand for national health care, national insurance, and single-payer health insurance, because that would de-link the right to health coverage from employment. Because when you have unstable employment, mm-hmm. having your insurance linked to your employment is just not a solution. Huge numbers of people would always drop through the cracks. So we are a constituency, I think, that's really very much in favor of what the polls show now most Americans are in favor of, which is single-payer health insurance. On the issue of educational quality, I think, the one-liner that we use all the time, which I'm sure you've heard too, is, well, our working conditions are students' learning conditions. Mm-hmm. And it's really true. If we don't know what we're going to be teaching until the last minute, we can't prepare. They
right.
can't know who's going to be their teacher. It shows up in the book as TBA, to be announced, or staff. And freshmen look and they think, who is this person, staff, that's teaching all these courses? Fred Staff, right? One organizing campaign adjuncts actually made buttons that said, Fred Staff, Jennifer Staff, Joe Staff. And it really baffled a lot of the young undergraduates but it started conversations, and that was the idea. Other thing is office hours. If you don't have an office, or you're not paid for office hours, you can't consult with students in office hours. People do it for free in their cafeterias and their car trunks and on their hoods and that sort of thing. But it's not the same as having, the same kind of access to a professor that you should have, or being able to come back the next year and find the person for consultation or for a letter of recommendation.
Right.
Students have been very, very supportive of the struggle to organize and improve these conditions when they're informed. But a lot of teachers are afraid to be open to their students, to come out of the closet, for fear they'll lose respect that by admitting they're, quote, not real professors. And that's an issue that we talk about a lot within the movement.
Yeah, I think they already know who's a professor and who's not, who's an instructor, okay, thanks a lot.
All right,
thank you.
Once we have somebody here on a cell phone who is on the road, I guess, here, line number 3. Hello.
Hi.
Yeah.
I was just curious if you could differentiate within the universe of adjunct faculty, in that 500,000, I believe, was your estimate. Mm-hmm. Are you including graduate employees, graduate students, such as teaching assistants?
In the total, drawing the universe in the biggest possible circle, I would include them, sure. Their conditions are somewhat different because they're inherently temporary in that status. But in the big circle of contingent, precarious college teachers, they are certainly in it. And those of us who are teaching in more classical adjunct or temporary situations certainly see them as as brothers and sisters, and their unionization movement is a tremendously important thing to the whole the union movement and the labor movement on campuses, and has been a great inspiration to many of us.
So does that half million figure not include then the graduate employees, or does it?
Well, you know, their total numbers are actually not that great compared to the half million. I mean, they're under 100,000 total themselves.
Gotcha.
Because the majority of higher education in the United States doesn't take place at Research One universities with PhD programs. That's what gets the publicity. But the majority of higher education in the United States takes place in community colleges and other non-elite places that hire, you know, there aren't any graduate students there.
And that's where I wondered if you might distinguish within the universe of these more classical contingent faculty. For instance, at a community college, you might have a realtor who teaches a course in real estate. You might have a state representative who teaches a course in state and local government.
Right.
And that's a different category of adjunct faculty, it seems to me, than the freeway flyer who's trying to put together enough courses to have a living. So I'll hang up and just listen, but I'm curious about the heterogeneity within adjunct faculty. Thanks.
Okay, well, thanks for the call.
Well, we are heterogeneous. The classical community professional or civic leader teaching the occasional course, or even the celebrity adjunct. Oprah was an adjunct at Northwestern for one semester. Is the old image of what an adjunct or temporary teacher was. That is now a tremendously small percentage of the total. We are the majority of college teachers. We are teaching the majority of college courses. It's not mainly those folks anymore. That's 25 years ago. But even those folks, we have found when we organize, still want to their contribution to be respected. They want to be, you know, informed well in advance of what they're going to be doing. They don't like the idea that they're doing the same work for a tenth of what regular professors get, even if they don't need the money. It's a respect thing. And we found that that the expression of respect goes to economics, to professional support services, to notice, to job security, to all those kinds of things, and that different things are the primary thing for different groups of people. But people want to be respected, and they want their work to be respected. And unfortunately, the trends with the corporatization of higher education today, our work, we feel, is less and less respected as top administrators transform from educational leaders to CEOs of the education industry.
Hmm. One of the things I think that is true is that there are more people with PhDs than there are positions for college teachers. It strikes me that one of the problems here, I hear what you say about the bottom line here being organizing, but it strikes me as one of the problems is that there are always going to be more people who want to teach at college and universities than there are teaching positions. Aren't there always going to be people who are going to say, no matter how bad it is, I'll take the job?
Well, how many teaching positions there are is a humanly created thing. And it's created as a function partly of funding. It's created as a function of how big are the classes going to be, and also a function of the demand for higher education. Now, the demand for higher education has been growing consistently. That's not slacking off. People are spending more and more of the gross domestic product on higher education every year. More and more students are wanting higher education. People banging on the doors. The problem is turning that need, that social need, into effective economic demand for and defining that as full-time tenure-track faculty positions. As it is now, a full-time tenure-track faculty member retires, the chances are better than 50% that that line will not be filled.
Hmm. Yeah, that was also one of the things that I
so the I work is there.
That over time, what's happening is that there are fewer tenure track positions. That is, and again, that's, I guess my perception is, again, that sort of goes back to to the bottom line, the bottom money line, and that administrators like to have control over hiring and firing a faculty. And if you have fewer people who have tenure, well, it's easier to do what you will with your faculty.
Yeah, and our argument is that that just allows a lot of incompetence in the administrative ranks because we cover all their mistakes. Their flexibility is our insecurity, right? Their bottom line is our rent.
Yeah. Again, to introduce our guest, Joe Berry. He teaches as a non-tenure-track instructor at the University of Illinois in the Chicago Labor Education Program.
So we teach trade unionists.
We teach trade unions. He also teaches history part-time at Roosevelt University, and he has written a book on this subject. It's titled Reclaiming the Ivory Tower, Organizing Adjuncts to Change Higher Education. It is published by the Monthly Review Press. It is out now, if you want to look at it. He's also been involved in organizing around this issue for some time. He chairs the Chicago Coalition of Contingent Academic Labor. He is also on the coordinating committee of the North American Alliance for Fair Employment, and this is a group of various organizations that are concerned with contingent and precarious employment. He makes his home in Chicago.
I might mention, if people are interested in continuing this discussion after the show or in other ways, or getting a copy of the book, there is a website called reclaimingtheivorytower.org.
Very good. Let's talk with some more folks because the lines are full. Another cell phone caller here to start us off, line one. Hello.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of things I could say on it. But anyway, I'm currently on the academic job market for Research One jobs. I'm pretty sure I'm going to get something. So, but I've had the opportunity to visit several different campuses, and wow, they're really different even among places. But what I was going to say is I remember talking to one chair, and I'm going to let all this go nameless. I will not kiss and tell on anything here. But I was actually, I can't even really say more better than creeped out by the fact that he basically said, oh yeah, as long as you come up with just the salary to pay an adjunct to cover your teaching position, that's fine with me. He's like, I expect you to basically buy out all your time. Hmm. And I swear that was just, that did not sit right with me at all. And I know, having talked to other people at other schools who will also remain nameless, you know, they were like, no, we don't like our people buying their time out. You know, we think that's important that they, you know, actually teach their classes. And I, you know, I have to say that was a pretty big negative for me when this guy said, essentially, I expect you to buy all your time out. I'm like, I don't know. That doesn't sound good to me. But anyway, so I just wondered if you care to comment on that, and then I'll let you go.
Okay.
Well, thank you. This is really becoming more common at high-end Research One universities, especially for the minority who get the tenure track positions. And since the bar for tenure has been raised so much, in terms of publishing requirements and stuff, of people who are on that top elite scale, this is becoming more and more common. And I think it's to the detriment of education and to the detriment of the professional orientation of the professors involved as well.
Well, one of the problems that I saw with this, just from any other criterion aside, from a truly selfish notion, teaching is where you're going to meet your grad students.
That's true.
Typically, especially if you're in a field like mine where the visibility of the field is not especially large as a subdiscipline of what I'm in.
I see.
And you got to, you know, I mean, and there's a huge shortage, in fact, so there's plenty of jobs. But you need to talk to people for them to even be able to, you know that you're there. As I said, I was a little creeped out by that, and I can't really think of a better word than that. But thanks for the show. All right,
thanks for the call. Next up, we have a caller in Champaign, line two. Hello.
I think the adjunct professors of the world are kind of in a double bind, and there's a supply demand issue because the universities are only going to get a certain amount of funding, and there's a us-them issue. Like, I think a lot of times if you're a professor who got his shot in his position in 1978, your main goal is not to bring up other professors, but to maintain your position and to increase your benefits. And if that's to the detriment of new professors, well, them's the breaks.
Is that, are you finished?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I think there is that ideology out there, and some folks definitely adopt that as their main perspective. Not all, and not even among all senior, full-time, tenured, and tenure-track faculty adopt that perspective exclusively, because we are involved in a collective endeavor as well as an individual career, and a lot of people are very serious about the institution and about the mission of education, and leaving aside research for just a moment. And that it can only, the changes that are taking place and are threatening to take place can only be confronted on a collective level. And I think a lot of tenured faculty can be appealed to on that level and have been successfully. But given that they are now a privileged minority in higher education, the real force for change is going to come from organizing the majority.
Can I say one more thing?
Yeah, sure.
In terms of being a privileged minority, not only are they a privileged minority within the university, but there are very few professions that you can name in the United States of America that have tenure and guaranteed employment regardless of how you act, where it's next to impossible to get rid of you. Nobody I know has a job like that outside of teaching.
Well, it is being a tenure professor is one of the more secure jobs in the world. Now, it is wrong that tenured people get fired every year. That's a little known fact, actually. Both tenured school teachers and tenured college teachers get fired every year. What tenure does is provide a due process and just cause protection. Outside of the university, the only people who have anything resembling that kind of protection is people who have union contracts with just cause, due process, progressive discipline provisions in them. And unfortunately, now that is down around 10% of the population.
I think people in the ivory tower have to remember that the rest of us don't live like they do. Like the rest of us have at-will employment.
Right. My argument is that
getting guaranteed raises every year of 4%, or like if you're a tenure-track guy, when the rest of us may get COLA, cost of living. Mm-hmm. I mean, that makes the rest of the population not really pity you that much.
Well, and my argument is, I agree with you. My argument is that we cannot defend tenure. We cannot combat the erosion of tenure, which is what administrators are working on very explicitly now, if you go to their meetings, on the basis that we should have this special perk because we're special. I don't think that's accurate, and I don't think it'll sell either, as you just noted. I think, though, what we need to say, and what I say when I teach other workers as well as university employees, is that every worker who does a socially useful, honest work, not robbing banks or that sort of dealing drugs, deserves to have some security of employment after a reasonable probation adequately served. And that's exactly what's brought people into the streets by the hundreds of thousands in France, is the threat to take that away from everybody under 27 or 28 years old.
Why do you think America has the lowest unemployment in relation to France? I think there's flexibility in our workforce that allows people to get hired and fired. And I think that the flexibility is gone from the university. Whether you're a good professor or not, whether you teach classes or not, regardless of what you do, the cost to the university of firing you is going to be huge. And there'll be a lawsuit after it, whether they're right or wrong.
Well, in fact, flexibility has come to the university, and the majority of people teaching college classes are flexible, untenured, and never be tenured teachers. So this is past tense, not present tense. And the other thing I would say about
a decade after everybody else had that problem.
Well,
they're behind. They're not ahead.
It's parallel.
Oh, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks for the call. I have heard full-time tenured faculty at this university speak disparagingly about their adjunct colleagues, who I'm not even sure that they would grace them with the title colleague. And I guess I do find myself wondering for those people, and I don't mean to paint with too broad a brush here, but what sort of support there would be among the tenured faculty for providing the greater securities, the benefits, the better pay, all of those things that would make life for adjuncts better. What sort of support you perceive there to be out there?
Well, it varies. It's tremendously mixed. There is tremendous feelings of elitism and condescension. But full-time tenure-track faculty have seen their jobs being degraded in many cases. As they become fewer and fewer, the departmental sorts of work and collective work of a department has to be shared among fewer and fewer folks. And that burden has become quite significant in a lot of places, which is why administrators are going now to full-time, non-tenure-track people instead of part-timers in many cases, because they can be demanded to do that sort of departmental and meeting and semi-administrative curriculum development, all that kind of work as well. You know, some full-time tenured faculty are just counting the days to their retirement and après moi le déluge. But others really do care about the mission of the university. And while there's tremendous division between those who are on the tenure track and those who aren't, they are open to being educated. But we have to organize ourselves. This cannot be charity. It has to be we organizing ourselves and then reaching out to our more privileged colleagues for a hand of solidarity, not charity.
Let's talk with another caller. This is Champagne in line 3. Hello.
Hello. I'm currently a student here at the university, and I have the hope of someday being an instructor at the community college level.
Good for you. It's great work.
Yeah. But I've been told by a couple of friends of mine who actually are full-time instructors at several community colleges here in the state of Illinois that a lot of people in the hiring process actually look down on people who have had part-time experience in, you know, teaching classes at the community college level, that it's actually a negative when they're looking to hire someone. And I'm wondering if that's true. And
there's actually been research on that. I can actually answer that question.
Okay.
And I can answer it just by quoting the title of the main research paper on the subject. And the title of the paper was Working for Peanuts and Accumulating Deficits.
Okay.
Literally, the break-off point, and this was done through blind surveys of hiring officers in higher education, department heads and assistant deans, people at that level who actually hire us as adjuncts. It was found that that after about 3 years was about the average point. If you had more than 3 years of adjunct part-time work, every year after that made you a less attractive for full-time hiring. This is not universal, but that matches my experience as well. And I think it's probably less. I think they probably were gilding the lily somewhat.
Okay, and then I guess my question then would be, so it's not actually seen as getting your foot in the door and getting experience. Should you not try to have any part-time experience at all? Should you just try and go right into it full force and apply for full-time positions?
Well, I think people should apply, but the chances for most of us of getting a position straight out of graduate school with your master's or your PhD, you know, it's not going to happen for most people. Mm-hmm. And then you've got to internalize that and not feel that you have been personally put down. No, there's a structural problem in the employment system and in the system of higher education, and that is, you know, that people have to deal with, and it's very hard because you know, we're taught in graduate school that we rise on the basis of individual merit and that it's a meritocracy and you work hard and you study and you become expert and you will be rewarded. And then you get out and you discover that simply you've been lied to and the truth won't make you free. Only if you collectively organize to change the reality, then, you know, and use the truth to make you free.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thank you very much.
And good luck.
All right. Thanks for the call. We have about 10-12 minutes left in this part of Focus 580. Our guest is Joe Berry. He teaches in the Chicago Labor Education Program of the University of Illinois, where they teach trade unionists. There he is a non-tenure-track instructor there. He also teaches history part-time at Roosevelt University and has, in fact, been a contingent faculty person now for over 20 years. Ad is the author of the book entitled Reclaiming the Ivory Tower, Organizing Adjuncts to Change Higher Education. He'll be giving a talk, by the way, talking about these issues this afternoon at 3:30 at the Institute of Labor and Industrial Relations on the U of I campus. So anyone, I'm sure, who is interested would like to meet him or hear what he has to say should feel free to stop by there. Let's talk again with another caller. This next person in line is in Mattoon, line 4. Hello.
Good morning. I have been an adjunct for a number of years. While I was completing my master's degree, I'm a second career person. I taught for 2-3 years at a community college and then laid off while I pursued my doctorate. And since I've been ABD, I've continued to teach as an adjunct in both a state institution and a private four-year college. And so, you know, I've kind of seen the way the ropes go, and I certainly can't take any argument with anything that you've said so far.
Thank you.
And one of the things also is, even though I've worked in a community college, a state university, and a private university, I've never had a pay increase at any institution where I've been, nor have I been offered anything near like security. And so it is. And I mean, to the caller earlier, gentleman talking about how, you know, the private industry, well, you know, I'm sure he knows from 1 month to the next that he's pretty much set on a job. And with an adjunct, if your class doesn't meet, you don't work. And if you don't work, you don't get paid, which makes it real easy on the budgets of institutions. But one of the things to kind of come from the other side of the argument is, I will say, is that if I hadn't had the opportunity to work as an adjunct, I never would have had the opportunity to teach at all, which is what I really want to do, and it has given me a real chance to work in the classroom and pursue a career that I really do enjoy. Also, it's been my experience that in the area where I am, adjuncts generally fall into two categories. There's one, it's people like me who want a career in higher education and are looking for a full-time permanent position of some sort and are teaching part-time until one comes along. And people have full-time jobs and are filling in as an adjunct simply because, you know, they've got some content knowledge, but don't have a lot of instructional knowledge. So when it comes to quality of education, you know, sometimes I agree that adjuncts who come out of private work and are doing this as a second part-time job and haven't had the training as an instructor don't carry the quality into the classroom. On the other hand, people like me realize that, you know, our job security is only as good as our course evaluations. And if we don't deliver an excellent product to the students, you know, the odds on us getting the call for the next semester slim down considerably.
Yeah, I agree with what you say. I would just say about the quality of teaching, part of that is, you know, administrators and employers are supposed to have some responsibility for professional development, and very little is provided for professional development of adjuncts. And my experience has been that people who have other professions and are teaching part-time would welcome the chance to have some collegial relations and professional development in teaching, but it's almost never offered, almost never on paid time. Mm-hmm. And a great many of those folks, in fact, would rather be full-time teachers than doing what they're doing. The surveys that I've been involved with, when they ask people who are non-tenure track, part-time or full-time, would you accept a full-time tenure track job in the department you are working in today? Even a lot of people with other full-time jobs, which are often not professional jobs, driving cabs and waiting tables, 60, 70, 80% say yes. And for obvious reasons, it's one of the things that some of us have said over the years is it's great work. Mm-hmm. It should be a good job. Nobody went into it to get rich, but we ought to be able to make a decent living and expect to make a decent living. And that should be true of any socially useful work that people do.
I mean, I work with a lot of people, and I think I provide a lot of good, but I can't even think about buying a new home because, absolutely, you know, the income is so insecure.
I'm a renter myself.
You know, it's just absurd. And the last call, one of the things, comments that came up just really as I was listening, this just scared the hell out of me, and that's the thing about after 3 years, teaching part-time becomes a detriment. And I'm assuming this because if you really had the bona fides to be an instructor, somebody else would have hired you by now.
That's the attitude that's common.
Mm-hmm. But I guess, does that apply even if you're still, you know, completing your terminal degree And if that's the case, then what would you suggest to people like me and yourself who, you know, or at least like me and others in my condition who want to get a job in higher ed, but now are we, you know, cutting our own chances by continuing to teach for these departments?
Well, I'm like you. You're obviously not 20 years old.
No.
You obviously came back to school to get your PhD. I did that as well. This book is actually a version of my dissertation, and I got my PhD at 50. So partly it's recency of degree helps, but also, you know, that's, you know, the odds are against you. All I can say is the odds of making the leap to a tenure-track job, the number of brass rings that you can that are grabbable off the carousel keep shrinking, and the number of people crowded onto the carousel keeps increasing, because the carousel is still moving, right? They're still selling tickets. People want to teach. And people want higher education as well. There's work to be done, and people are being hired to do it. It's just the conditions under which they're being hired has been revolutionized downward since the 1970s. And the trick is to not blame yourself when you don't get that offer.
Well, I really appreciate your work. I really appreciate the station for putting on this program, especially since it's a university station, because I don't think most people in the general public have any idea what it's like for part-time, non-tenured folk, and really have no clue as to what it takes to teach in higher education, the demands that are placed upon you, and the low reward unless you've got, you know, a cushy, rare position. So thank you very much.
Okay, well, thank you.
Can I leave a final comment? I know we're close to the end of time, but I don't want to leave this discussion without giving people some idea that there really is a movement out there. There have been 18 new bargaining units formed in Chicago, in Illinois, more than that, that's minimum, since 1998, in both the public and the private sector, community colleges and universities, and every time it means a tremendous increase in people's pay and in their respect and in their the level of people's lives. It really is taking place among part-timers. There's only one case in the entire history of the United States where, when given a chance to vote in a secret ballot election for unionization, where people have voted no.
So organizing really has worked.
There really is a movement, and when we fight, we're winning. And that's a message that I want to. And there's institutions out there. There's the Coalition of Contingent Academic Labor on a national basis, has conferences every 2 years. There's Campus Equity Week that takes place in alternate years in the fall. That's taken place in a number of places in Illinois and across North America. That there really is a movement out there because the conditions are widespread throughout Canada and Mexico, likewise, and we can only change it from the bottom, and we are. And, you know, the half of the people who called are people who have direct contact with this. And my invitation to them and everybody else listening is, you know, I won't argue to stay in. If you can get a better gig somewhere else, do it. But as long as you're doing this work, get together with others and make it better. And thank you.
Well, we'll see if we can get maybe one more caller or two. Next, we'll go to Champaign, line two.
Okay, that's me?
Yes.
Okay, real quickly, I look forward to reading your book, and I just want to address something the previous caller who talked about being employed at will throughout the country and how the faculty members are an elite and a special position. I see nothing of great value in a workforce that doesn't have more job security than the most workers have in America. That seemed to be implicit, that he seemed to be, how can I put it, he seemed to have implicit in this conversation that capitalism, where you can be fired at will, is a good thing. I don't think that's a good thing. That's all I have to say, but I'm really enjoying your program.
Thank you. I don't think it's a good thing either, and one of the reasons why the official unemployment rate is lower here than in Western Europe is because tremendous numbers of the jobs that count people as employed are not living wage jobs. They're part-time, and they are really just higher-grade unemployment. And if you actually counted it properly, I don't think that our unemployment figures would be any lower than in Europe.
Very quickly, we'll try going to Crete here, line number three. Hello.
Yeah, I just wondered about grade inflation and part-timers. Does it go together because they have to protect themselves by giving A's and B's instead of C's and D's? And is there any table that we can find that says that Harvard has this percentage of part-timers and Illinois, Chicago has this percentage, that we can check these things out?
On grade inflation, there is that temptation. It varies tremendously, but I think it's happening all across the board in higher education. There was study at Harvard among faculty there, but certainly when people don't have job security, academic freedom can't be even in the same sentence. You know, to talk about somebody having full academic freedom and the ability to speak the truth as they see it and grade people truly as they see them, does go out to dinner. Go out the window. In terms of the statistics, the studies on grade inflation, I don't know of any that compare in that way. In terms of the total numbers of who teaches what, where in Chicago and Illinois, I've got some of that stuff in the book. Some of it comes out of the Illinois State Board of Higher Education, and some of it comes out of the National Center for Education Statistics as part of the Department of Education.
Yeah. I get it, though. It's a little bit hard sometimes to get those numbers because we're talking about really big-time turnover in these jobs.
And they're very bad numbers. The quality of statistics is bad. They're almost all based on administrative reports, and quite frankly, they lie. Hmm. They undercount, both purposefully and accidentally. That's part of the problem, is that we have been offloaded and in terms of responsibility. Pontius Pilate lives again.
If you would like to read more on this issue, you can look for the book authored by our guest, Joe Berry. It's Reclaiming the Ivory Tower, Organizing Adjuncts to Change Higher Education. It's published by the Monthly Review Press. Also, if you're here in and around Champaign-Urbana, he'll be giving a talk on this subject this afternoon at 3:30 at the Institute of Labor and Industrial Relations. That's at the Wagner Education Center, 504 East Armory in Champaign. And anyone, I'm sure, who is interested should feel welcome to attend. Thanks very much for being here.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Our program, Focus 580, made possible today in part with support from Owens Funeral Home at the corner of Elm and University in Champaign, locally owned and operated and serving families since 1925. The staff at Owens Funeral Home invites you to join them in supporting public radio. The broadcast today is also made possible with support from World Gourmet Foods at 120 Krispy Kreme Drive, just off Veterans Parkway in Washington in Bloomington, serving Bloomington Normal and surrounding cities with gourmet cheeses, chocolates, olives, and foods from around the world. Grand opening taste testing day will be held on Saturday, April 1st. World Gourmet Foods, 309-663-2222. And that is it. That is it for us here on Focus 580. We're finishing the week. However, there's much more in the way of news and features and other things. A chance to talk to Ed Kieser about the weather and a chance to hear a little political satire coming up in the 1 o'clock hour. All of that as part of the Afternoon Magazine. The host, Celeste Quinn.
Thank you, David. Indeed, coming up this afternoon in the 1 o'clock hour of the program at 106 Central Time, we will bring you the Capitol Steps Politics Takes a Holiday April Fool's Day Special. And following that program, we'll talk with Alex Boza. His latest